Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting.
Hi there. I'm Carol the Coach, and I am so glad to be with you tonight. I can't say enough for how important this show is to me. And, you know, I certainly get so many people that ask me questions and say, the show is helping to absolutely save their life. So I am thrilled that I can be of service to you. And, you know, that's what the treatment of sexual addiction is all about. It is about service. And what does that mean? That means that it's about giving back. And, boy, we can't give back enough, can we? I mean, there just is no doubt about it. When it comes to being able to make a difference in the lives of others, it's all about service. And that's why I am so happy to be here with you tonight. You know, I don't know what I would do if I had to figure out how to deal with this addiction. If I were you, it would be really, really tough. And so I thought, you know, I've done radio most of my life. I'm going to get on and see what's available to people who are dealing with sexual addiction. And I was surprised to find that there absolutely was nothing available to you all, whether you be a sex addict or whether you be a partner. So I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start the only sexual addiction radio show on iTunes, on Blog Talk Radio, anywhere in the United States. Well, actually, the entire world. And I've been doing this for about a year and a half, and I hope you will go to iTunes, which when you go to iTunes and subscribe for free, you will then be able to get every show that I have ever done. And let's face it, when you need information, you need it from the experts, and that's who I happen to interview. Tonight, I have a woman who has done everything to be on the show. She actually had a flight back from New York, and she was scheduled at a different time, and she changed it. And her name is Patty Henry, and she is a psychotherapist who's been in private practice for about 27 years. Now, her work began in a psychiatric women's program where she was committed to empowering women. But if you're a male sex addict, don't despair, because while she was working with women, it became very clear that many of the women that she worked with had husbands who cheated. They had multiple affairs. And when they came in to the program to help their wives heal, she saw that they too needed some real work. And it was then that Patty realized that men needed even more healing and help than women. So she researched the subject, and her work shifted to helping to empower men and to heal families. So in her best-selling book, The Emotionally Unavailable Man, A Blueprint for Healing, Ms. Henry outlines the causes behind men's sexual addictions. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight, the unavailable man. Now, you've heard me say it before, sexual addiction is an intimacy disorder to do with people that are unavailable emotionally. And so she's going to be talking about what that is, the unavailable man, a blueprint for healing. And she's going to talk about the research that she found that had shifted to empower men, to help the women heal, and to heal families. Because this is a rippling effect. You know, when you're doing your work, whether you be an addict or a partner, you are much more likely to change the entire trajectory of your family if you get the help that you need. You're not just doing the work for you, you're also doing the work for your family. So I am so happy to have her on tonight. You know, I got an email, and it was from a woman who said, boy, I don't know where to turn or what to do to get some help, but I know I'm at the end of my rope. I've been in an abusive relationship with a sexually addicted man for almost 10 years. Now, this woman says, I reached out to COSA several times to try and get assistance, and I have been unable to get them to call me back. Now, for some of you who may be tuning into the show for the first time, you may not realize that COSA is that for partners of sexual addiction. So, she said, a while ago, I Googled help with sexual addiction and started listening to your podcast, Carol. And boy, do I need counseling and direction. I've been trying to do this alone for far too long and have always found myself back in the arms of the person who has caused me so much pain and hurt. I need help to stop the cycle. Can you help me? Well, that same woman then called me in the middle of the night, hysterical. And, of course, I didn't get the message till the next morning. But I immediately called her. We hooked her up with a CSAT in her town. And here's what I know. If you're a partner, you may have to create what we call boundaries. And boundaries help to let others know what you will and won't accept. You know, sometimes I get women who have been so injured that they know not what they should do next. And so I would say if that's you, you need to read Facing the Heartbreak, which is a workbook for partners who need to learn more about boundaries. And when you do that, you have to create some of your own boundaries. You should go to COSA if they're available in your city. And when you create healthier boundaries, you start treating yourself better, and then you make decisions about men or women who are sex addicts that may have been abusive to you, whether it be emotional, physical, sexual, social, you name it. And so if you're a partner, don't think that there is not anything you can do, because here's what I promise you. When you make changes, again, it's the ripple effect. Everybody around you makes those same changes. And that's the beauty of this work. And I just can't talk enough about what you can do to make a difference. Whether you be an addict, you can get the help you need. You can change your life. You know that I do workshops. I do this radio show. I really work diligently to create change in my clients. And what I know to be true is that when they work hard on themselves, that's the start to real change. So when you say, there's nothing I can do, I can't make a difference. Or if you're an addict and you say, you know what, I've tried and I've tried and I've tried and I've tried and nothing works. Well, it may take you your 30th time to try and make a difference in your life. And that is the start of real change. And then you need the support to sustain the change. We also know that you can't do it alone. You need these podcasts. You need to do your reading. You need prayer and meditation. If you're agnostic or atheist, then stay with the meditation. I was recently interviewed by a television show, and I was talking about the fact that I happen to not only believe in a higher power, but I believe my higher power speaks to me. And one night, I was with my family, my husband, my in-laws, and we were doing the mundane. We were putting rock around our lakefront. We were raking leaves. When we came in to have dinner, we were incredibly tired. He had promised me that before we left, he would hang a picture. So he and his father were hanging the picture. I hadn't even asked him, but he knew that that was something that I really wanted. And they pulled out a huge piece of drywall. And he got very mad at me, started to yell at me. And, you know, somebody might have said it was abusive. I was shocked. Nobody really yells at me. I don't deserve that. But he was exhausted. He was tired. And he just started yelling. Okay, fast forward. We're leaving the lake. I'm furious that he was furious and yelling at me. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm not going to put up with that. And so I did the unthinkable. Okay, well, it wasn't the unthinkable, but what I did, I went to sleep on our drive home from the lake to our city home. Now, we have this pact. We don't go to sleep on each other in the car. So he could tell I was really mad. When we got home, I went right to bed. The next morning, I'm laying there doing what I do best, which is I'm talking to God. And I'm saying, you know what? You know how when I really get quiet and listen, you tell me what to do. So just let me know what I'm supposed to do today, this week, this month. I'm all ears. Well, I wasn't referencing my husband. I was referencing my wife. And what I heard loud and clear was, take better care of your husband. And I started arguing with God. I'm like, take better care of my husband. Oh, my gosh, you heard him yell at me last night. This isn't fair. I can't believe that you would tell me to take better care of him. I must have the wrong higher power. And I argued some more, and then I heard it again. Take better care of your husband. Well, since I know this practice works, I took a big sigh. I'm shaking my head. I get up. I go down, I make coffee, I bring him a cup of coffee because we're going to go to church. I wake him up, I say, hey, honey, it's time to get up. I've brought you a cup of coffee. Now, he doesn't drink anything upstairs in the bedroom. But he opens one eye. It was like he knew he was in the doghouse. And he said, huh? And I said, yeah, I brought you a cup of coffee. Do you want me to rub your back before we get up? And he just shook his head yes, so I got back in bed, and I laid down, and I rubbed his back. And I know that he was in shock. Well, after rubbing his back, we got up, we got dressed, we went to church, and he was all over me. You know, his arm was around me at church, he's rubbing my knee. He is so happy that he's not in the doghouse because he knows that that's where I thought he needed to be. But I was following my higher power's directive, and I was taking better care of him. We had an incredible day that morphed into the week. I mean, we don't have problems, but I mean, it was just, the normal me would have been mad at him for at least 48 hours. Because remember, again, he had verbally been abusive and he had yelled at me for no apparent reason. And I knew that. So I'm here to tell you that when you take better care of the things that you need to, when you listen to your higher power and your higher power gives you a directive, don't argue, just give it a chance. And if your higher power tells you to get to COSA, get to COSA. If your higher power tells you that you're to do more recovery reading or more prayer, listen and then do it. Because Patrick Carnes says, the founder of the sexual addiction revolution, he says, you can't do it alone. You need a committee. You need all those tools. You need a good CSAT therapist. You need good reading. You need a committee to help you make those changes. So tonight, as I said, we're going to be talking with Patty Henry, who is a psychotherapist, been in private practice for 27 years, and wrote The Emotionally Unavailable Man, A Blueprint for Healing. And she's going to be talking about the causes behind sexual addiction. So I'm really excited to hear what she has to say. Patty, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Carol. I am very grateful for the work that you are doing. It is very important, and I think you're wonderful. I just want to say that up front.
Well, thank you so much. And your book is wonderful. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what contributed to you wanting to write this book? Because here you've been working with women for so many years.
Yeah.
And then you had a shift in your thinking, and you knew that men needed the healing too.
Absolutely. I started my work almost 30 years ago working in psychiatric hospitals with women because I really wanted to empower women. And what I noticed is they couldn't really go home to their husband because they were complaining about he does this, he does that, he does this, without bringing the husband in for treatment as well, into the sessions. So when I brought the men into the sessions, I was stunned. I really thought, oh my goodness, they need help more than the women do. And so I started shifting, working with men, because we have done a great job in our country of empowering women. I'm glad. I don't want it to go backwards. But in the process, we have emasculated men to some extent. And my belief, my core belief is we must heal men to heal the world.
Well, I 100% believe that too. And you have figured out a very kind, gentle, and loving but structured way to help those men, and your book talks about that, A Blueprint for Healing, the Emotionally Unavailable Man. Now, tell me, how do men become emotionally unavailable?
Well, actually, we teach them that as little boys. We teach our little boys to shut down their emotional development. We tell them big boys don't cry, suck it up, be a man. Don't show your emotions. I have worked with so many people that have told me, I remember one radio show host actually who came at me very strong because he thought I was anti-male. And then as we got to talking, he said, oh, you're on the man's side. And I said, well, actually, I'd like to be thought of as the side of humanity for all of women and all men to heal. And then he started telling me his story. And when he was 8 years old, his dad died, and he never cried. He was 8 years old. I said, you didn't cry? And he said, no. When my dad died, my mom came to me and said, you are the man of the house now. No tears. Suck it up. And I think that's emotional abuse. And what happened, in fact, I think it's emotional abuse that goes on under the radar. Because we do this to our little boys, saying you may not develop a very essential part of who you are. So a lot of times I have women say to me, well, I have two kids. Well, actually, I have three. My husband's a third one. And the reality is there's some truth to that, because they shut down their emotional development at 8 years old or 6 years old or 12 years old, where they were no longer allowed to just feel the feelings that they're feeling. And so we don't do that to our little girls as a general rule. Certainly that has happened to little girls as well. But as a general rule in our culture, men are supposed to be strong, which means don't cry, don't have the pain that you're having, stuff it in. And so, you know, we raise little girls one way, we raise little boys another way, and 20 years later we put them together and we say, why aren't they getting along? And they're not even speaking the same language.
Oh, that is so true. And as as corny as people may think that John Gray is, who wrote the Venus and Mars series, I actually trained with him, and he said the exact same thing. He said, you know, the genders are from two different worlds because they've been given permission or not been given permission to be their authentic self. So that's exactly what you saw in your practice, and you've been working with men ever since to get them to feel their emotions.
Exactly, to reconnect to that vital part that they were born with, just like the rest of us. I mean, really, if you have a 2-year-old boy or a 2-year-old little girl, they will tell you if they're not happy. I mean, you know it. They will tell you, I'm scared, I'm upset, I'm angry, you know, because they haven't learned yet that you're not allowed to have those emotions. And so it's just tragic to me. Somewhere between the age of 2 and 10, usually, men, our little boys, get shut down emotionally and arrest their emotional development, which is really critical for healing the world, because another part of what gets shut down is developing the empathy. So I can't hurt you because it hurts me to hurt you. But if I haven't developed that part of me, I can hurt you and it doesn't really bother me.
So then tell me, in your opinion, how do you think that contributes to sexual addiction, that emotional arrested development? How does that contribute?
Well, I talk in my book about, you know, that we, first of all, my book is written as a flip book. One direction women read it and the other direction men read it, because women get in the way of emotional healing of men sometimes, often actually, because we've really empowered women and we still have this princess thing going on. We're raising our children, you know, if you're daddy's little girl, you're daddy's little princess. Or we still have that going on to some extent, but it's not the helpless princess anymore. It's not, I'm waiting for my prince to come. Oh, no, this is the demanding princess, the queen of everything, carry my luggage. You know, don't have any needs of your own, just meet mine. Kind of an angry princess. Because we've, you know, of course, had the women's movement in the 70s, and now those mothers' children, you know, are having children, and they have been taught, don't take anything from guys. Don't take crap. You can do anything you want. Don't let a man say this. You know, you have to support yourself. You have to be able to take care of yourself. So we're empowering women. And what I've noticed in my practice is that women want more from their relationships now. They're saying, you know what, I can support myself. I can support my children. I want you to meet my emotional needs. And men don't know how to do that because we taught them, don't develop that self. So what I've noticed is women get angry. They're angry at their partner because you're not meeting all my needs. And that was the deal. I'm the princess. You married me. You're supposed to take care of all of my emotional needs. And they don't know how. So the term that I use is hurricaning. What I see a lot happening is women have the power in the relationship and they are hurricaning on their partner. There are lots of different kinds of hurricanes. One is just yelling, you know, screaming, calling names, raging, really. Another form of hurricaning is cold shoulder. The husband or the boyfriend walks in and they just treat him like a piece of furniture. Another type of hurricaning is taking up all the space in the room, talking nonstop. Another form of hurricaning is you're hurting me. You're hurting me so much. If you have any needs of your own, you're hurting me. So there are lots of forms of hurricaning, but the one thing they have in common is that they are relentless. Actually, two things they have in common. They're relentless and they're overwhelming to the man. They're overwhelming because he doesn't have the emotional tools, the emotional words, good boundaries. He doesn't have that. And so he's hurricaned on. So we've seen this amazing spike in sexual addiction in the last couple of decades because men don't feel any authentic power with their partner. And so they go outside of the relationship. They go into porn. I mean, I know you know this, Carol, but the number one site hit on the internet is porn. Because I don't have any authentic power, so I have sort of pseudo power. Like pseudo power, I can walk into a topless bar and a woman will strip for me. I will pay for them to strip for me. Or I can go in the back room and have sex with her. So I have, as a man, some sense of power over women, because when I'm at home, I don't have any power. This woman is annihilating me. I don't know what to do with her. I think she's crazy, so I'll just shut my mouth and go underground.
Well, you're absolutely right in so many respects. Now, I'm sure there might be women listening, and they'll say, now, I am not responsible for my husband's addiction.
Absolutely.
And yet, at the same time, you're saying, boy, to be able to help your husband heal, you have to be able to give them authentic permission to be themselves, to express themselves, to show emotion. What else do they need to do?
Well, definitely, I love what you're saying, because women do sometimes, when I do seminars, they're like, are you saying it's my fault? I'm like, no, absolutely not. This happened long before you met your partner. It happened when they're itty-bitty, growing up in our culture. And so did you cause that? No. However, if you're teaching your little boys that they're not allowed to have their emotions, then you are part of the problem, and we have to get that corrected. But, yeah, women, I really want to say clearly, this is not about fault. It's about recognizing that culturally we have developed this all together. Men and women all together have done this. And so how do we fix it? And part the biggest thing I think that women can do is create safety for their partner, emotional safety for their partner to actually show up. Now, if there's hurricaning in the house, it's not safe. And so that person's going to go underground. Well, they either fight, flight, or freeze. But a lot of times with sexual addiction, multiple affairs, pornography, topless bars, prostitutes, it's underground. So definitely creating a space where I'm going to stop hurricaning. I'm going to stop reacting. I'm going to stop reacting to my partner's inability to express themselves emotionally. I'm going to be kinder.
Well, that makes absolute sense. So if they read about hurricaning and find out what women do in general, they need to ask themselves, do I, too, do these things? And if they do, they have to look at ways to reverse that.
Absolutely. I mean, I was the queen of hurricaning, so no judgment. I mean, it's just I was frustrated with my partner, and I remember one argument we had, and that was probably about 25 years ago because I had a little baby at that time, and I was trying to make my point to my partner, and I was pulling out all the stops, and what about this, and what about this, and what about this, and what about this, and he just was looking out the window, and which made me mad. you know, of course, aren't you paying attention to me? And finally, I said to him, do you understand what I'm saying? And without missing a beat, he said, I can't even hear you talking.
Mm.
He was overloaded. He was overwhelmed. There's no way he could take in that information in that presentation. I just really got clear, oh, this is not effective. And that's the bottom line. Hurricaning is not effective. It's not healing. It might work in the short term every once in a while, and you mm-hmm. might train your partner to kind of do whatever you tell them to do, but they're not really present in the relationship. They're trying to protect themselves from that craziness.
Yes, and then if they're not present, they feel disconnected. There's a social and sexual intimacy disorder going on, and
Absolutely.
They go outside of the marriage to feel some relief, to medicate, and to escape what is not going right for them in their real life.
And also to feel some power.
Even though it's false power.
Absolutely. Even though it's pseudo power, even though it's false, it's not authentic power, but it feels better than to go home and get hurricaned on, and I don't have any tools to stand up to this. And truly, Carol, it's across all socioeconomic levels. I remember one heart surgeon that he and his wife came in, and one of the first things he said to me, he said, she won't even let me roll down the window in the car. And I said, excuse me? He said, yes, she puts on the kid-proof lock on the window, and I'm not allowed to open the window. I thought, oh, my word. You're a heart surgeon. You know, you can't figure this out, that you need a boundary, that you need to drive separately, that you need to have a conversation with her that says, okay, this has got to change. No, he was just pouting like a very young child, not having the tool. And, you know, in our culture, historically, men have been allowed to have two parts of themselves. They're allowed to have anger, and they're allowed to have their sexuality. But the whole spectrum of emotions, they've been taught to shut down. I guess I'll say one more.
Okay, so then, obviously, one of the things that we're looking at here is giving men back their power and their dignity. And,
I don't think they've ever had it. I think that, you know, for many, many years, we had, you know, women's roles and men's roles. And I guess there could be a feeling of power then, but definitely not. We're in a new age. You know, we're waking up women to a new understanding of how to love and how to have space for another person. To me, loving is really, first, I do no harm. And second, I realize I am with an other. They're not the same as me. They're someone different. They're not going to think the same as me. They're not going to say what I want them to say. They're another person. So I see women really waking up to understanding what love is and being able to stretch in that direction. And I think we still have to teach that to men, that deep, loving heart.
Well, then how would you suggest that women go about doing that, especially if by the time you are intervening, there's already been some infidelity, indiscretions, perhaps some porn use, and so women are shut down and angry. So what do you do?
Well, you know, first you stop the hurricane. you know, because nothing's going to get better with the hurricaning. And sometimes they're both hurricaning by the time I see them. But I feel that women hurricane because they're so frustrated they can't get through, and men hurricane more because they don't have any other tools. They are trying to protect themselves. I mean, I think that's where domestic abuse comes from. You know, they're just feeling emasculated. So if you're in a relationship where your partner is feeling emasculated, it increases the chances of sexually acting out and sexual addiction. So we want to reduce that emasculation and, you know, stop the hurricaning for sure. And I tell each of my clients, this is my belief system, that when we come to the planet, we each get a little boat. And as soon as we're born, we get a boat. And we're floating down this river, this adventure called life. Nobody else is in the boat with you. We tie up our boats together off and on throughout the day, but you're the only one in your boat 24/7. So you are the number one influence on yourself. So recovery to me is a very personal kind of charge to each of us, to learn how to get out of our fear and our anger and our harming the other person and get into the higher energy vibration of loving and joyful and, you know, happy energy vibration. And so everybody has to do that regardless of whether your partner does it, because you're in your boat by yourself. It's sort of like having two alcoholics and one saying, well, I can't get sober because he's still drinking. It's like, well, no, that's not really true. You can still get sober whether or not he's drinking. In fact, you have to get sober whether or not he's still drinking. It doesn't matter. And so what I'm talking about is emotional sobriety, emotionally growing up to whoever the partner is in the co-addiction. You know, whether it's the female or the male, it's like, you've got work to do to heal and become a non-reactionary, fully empowered adult self, authentic self, who you were born to be on the planet.
Okay, so now let's talk about your book for a minute. You did say okay. It's a flip book, right? I mean, one half is
right.
Written for men and one half is written for women. Why'd you write it that way?
Well, actually, it's about two-thirds written to the man and one-third to the woman because, you know, we have two others in there. We have one that the book really is about healing men. I know sometimes people say, why didn't you write about the emotionally unavailable woman? It's like, well, that's not what this book is about. It's about men, healing men. And truly, there are women who read my book, The Men's Side and the Women's Side, and they say, I relate more to the man's side. I had to shut down emotionally when I was growing up. I wasn't allowed to cry. I was told, if you want to cry, I'll give you something to cry about. And so I shut down. So to me, it doesn't matter if the woman relates more to the man's side, that's fine. Whatever works, as long as we get to healing. But the book came to me that way. I was like, wow, this is all talking in a voice directly to men, how to empower them, how to gain boundaries, how to gain a voice, how to recognize that they have needs the same as their partner has needs and that they're valuable, and how to speak their truth out loud. Then the other one-third of the book, the flip side for women, because I want women to look at, why are you with somebody that's emotionally unavailable? How did you get here? And what's the payoff for you to stay? And what's the payoff as far as hurricaning? And to really have women start looking at their own behavior. A lot of times people will pick an emotionally unavailable man because they've had an emotionally unavailable parent. And so it feels familiar. It feels like, oh, this fits. You're not really there for me? Great, because that's what they grew up with. And so
that makes total sense. I go with that 100%. A flip book then really kind of shows the contrast between what men do and what women do and what men need and what women need.
Right, and I really charge women, and men too, but particularly in this book, really charge women with who are you? I mean, let's say we have a handicapped person. How do you treat a handicapped person? Do you rage at them, or do you have some compassion because they're blind, you know, and they can't see? And so if we look at what happened to men when they were little, and as little boys, and realize, wow, that's not their fault. They didn't get what they needed. They are blind in many ways. Then I can get to compassion. Then I can look at my own behavior and say, am I going to be a person who is verbally abusive to another person ever? And really to look at...
So, you know, obviously... It's a simple way to help people to understand the differences, the gender differences, the way they were raised, their experiences, and what they can do to correct. Now, I got a question for you, because obviously you said that some people go, why don't you write about the emotionally unavailable women? And you admit, yes, there are emotionally unavailable women, but you've taken one topic at a time, and in this case, it was the men.
Well, and there's such a higher prevalence of men being shut down emotionally than women. I mean, there certainly are women that have been shut down as little girls, and my heart and compassion is with them as well, because that's a vital part of us. We come with it. And to say, oh, you can't have that peace, it's like saying, you know, you can't develop your intellect. It's so vital. But it's just epidemic for men. And so when I work with a couple and when I speak places and I'm doing educating, it's about what are we doing right now in 2015? How are we raising our little boys? And also getting in at two levels, let me look at my partner and how can I help in the healing, which basically is I have to start by making it safe for him. And it's definitely difficult to do because he's been acting out all over the place and he hasn't made it safe for me. But again, I can get sober even if he doesn't. So what happens is the relationship either heals or the woman outgrows the relationship. But she does so having an empowered self instead of just a one that's very reactionary and verbally abusive and controlling. So she walks away with a stronger self, knowing who she is and a kinder self.
Now, you know, you said that obviously there are more men with sexual addiction. I would agree, although, boys, with texting and sexting and chat rooms,
yes.
More and more and more women are feeling emotionally unfulfilled and are going to a compulsive sexual acting out to get their needs met. So I'm wondering, what do you believe about women and sexual addiction? Where do you think that comes from?
Well, definitely culturally, I have the belief and the experience that every woman in our country is at least at a low level, low grade, sexually abused. Every woman. Because we've let little boys develop their anger and their sexuality. And so women are often reduced, as you know, to sexual objects, to one dimension. Because they don't know how to deal with the other dimensions. So definitely men have advances toward women that they are not wanting. When I turned 50, I thought, oh, good, all those sexual unwanted advances will stop. And I was turning into my neighborhood one day, and I just casually looked over at the car next to me, and the man was wagging his tongue at me.
Uh-huh.
I'm over 50. You know, what do you think's going to happen here? We're going to pull over and have sex? I mean, and so there's this sexualization of women that part of the message that many women get is your value is in your sexuality. Your value is in how you look. Your value is in, you know, your sexuality, that one dimension. And so if I've had an emotionally unavailable dad, not interested in me, not there, not talking, not available, and I learned that what I look like and how sexual I am, it gives me attention, it's very seductive. It's very, you know, it's easy to get pulled that direction, for sure. And we have, again, this, we've empowered women in many ways to not be afraid. And so, yeah, I can do that just the same as the next person or a man. I had one woman, she was 21 years old when she came to me, and she said, yeah, I'm so sick of drive-through sex. And I said, you know, tell me about drive-through sex. She said, you know, like when you go to McDonald's and you drive through and they give you the food and then you drive away and you never see them again. And she said, that's what I do with men all the time. And I just still feel empty. It's like, yeah, that's not going to fill it. But she was beautiful and she had been very sexualized her whole life. Since she was little, tiny. I mean, she had just been told over and over and over again, oh, my God, you're so beautiful. You're so sexy. You're so this. You're so that. And then she grew breasts, and it was like, oh, my gosh, every man on the planet, since she was 12 years old, paid attention to her looks. So, you know, certainly a person's self-image can get skewed.
Well, absolutely, 100%. So that's how you believe that they begin to form their sexual addiction, because they've been objectified.
Objectified, and also, you know, 1 out of 4 little girls are sexually abused. And so I've worked with many topless dancers, and they've all been sexually abused, every single one, without exception. And you know, I also have women that are very, very angry at men for sexualizing them. And so, you know, they might become a prostitute or they might become a topless dancer because I am getting their money. You know, I feel like I'm in charge. I'm winning. It's like, no, no, you're not winning. But there's an illusion of feeling powerful. I know when a couple comes in, a lot of times, you know, within 3 minutes, I know who's in charge. I do a test right up front. I tell them, I don't know what your house is like. I don't live with you. So I need to hear from each of you what your marriage is like and what it's like to live in your house. And then I sort of divert my eyes and I say, you know, it doesn't matter to me who starts. So who do you think starts, Carol?
A woman.
The woman usually turns to her husband and says, you go. And he does.
Is that absolutely right?
Yes.
That they make the first start and they want to hear what their husband has to say, almost
yes.
as if it's not going to be good enough.
And I'm going to tell you what to do. No, you go. And they do, and I think, oh, boy, this guy's in trouble. And sometimes the woman will say, oh, I'll talk. He doesn't even know how to talk. Now, I've never met this couple before, and I know this man is in trouble. He doesn't have any power in the system, and she's just really frustrated by it because she can't get her needs met. And so, yeah, it's pretty much the woman will have the power in the system. And when I say that, they say, well, I don't have the power. I don't have any power at all. And the reality is they don't feel powerful. Because they're not getting their needs met. And
mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
it's...
So now, tell our listening audience, one, how can they get your book? And two, how can they get a hold of you if they want to dialogue with you, set up an appointment, talk about how to get a therapist like you? How does that work?
Well, my book, of course, is on Amazon, and also just my website is Patti, P-A-T-T-I, with a hyphen or a dash, and then Henry, H-E-N-R-Y.com. And they can write to me at patti@patti-henry.com. I was just in New York the last 5 days working with a couple up there. I do travel. I go and work with couples all around the country. I do Skype sessions with people really all around the world. And I'm in Houston, Texas, and sometimes people will say, well, I'm in Minneapolis. It's like, well, we can Skype, or you can come here, or I can come there. And so I work with couples all over the place and individuals as well. But usually there's just a lot of pain in the couplehood. So.
Oh, 100%. So now, when you say on Skype, share with our listening audience, how does that work?
Oh, Skyping or FaceTime, whatever your computer has, as long as your computer has a little camera. My computer has a little camera, and there's a free download for Skype. And if you have a Mac, you should have a free FaceTime already on it. And you just download it, and then you can write to me. It's best to email me first so that I know that we're going to set up that Skype connection. And then you just look up my Skype name and add me as a contact, and then we will set up a time in my schedule, and then we spend time having a session just via Skype so I can see you and you can see me. I've worked with couples that way. In fact, I just met one of my couples in New York City that I've never met in person before. I've worked with them through Skype for the last 6 or 7 months, so it was nice to be in New York and be able to meet them for the first time. So,
all right, so you go all over the country. If they've got the time and the money, you've got the time and availability also.
Well, yeah, we have to coordinate that with my schedule and with their schedule. But, yes, I travel, or people come to me to do an intensive. If the, you know, if the relationship is really, really code blue, and it's really barely hanging on, very, very breathing, people often will come, because I do my best to help them turn that around.
Oh, and very good, Chris, very good. Any books or other projects in the works?
Well, actually, I just finished my next manuscript. It's 2 Lifetimes. That's the title of it right now. And it's just being in readings right now. I have copies of it out to people reading it and giving me feedback, so I'll have one more polish before I get it to the publisher. But it's definitely about, I believe that we have the opportunity to have 2 lifetimes on the planet. And the first lifetime is definitely one of suffering and pain and a lot of reactionary and a lot of wounding that happened to us growing up. And the second one is full of love and light and joy. And the book is really how to get from one lifetime to the other, how to shift over from, you know, just wounding each other into really another kind of marriage, another kind of life together. I think marriage and is a committed relationship is really the crucial to help us do that work, to get from the one lifetime, I just call it lifetime, where there's so much reacting to each other, anger, fear, pride, all that going on, over to where I really learn how to love and do no harm and honor you as another human being on the planet doing the best you can, as I'm doing the best I can. Because that's really all we can do, is try to figure out this planet and do the best we can in the process.
Well, and what you're referencing is exactly what the transformation for sex addicts and partners of sex addicts go through. You know, they've lived life of suffering. It may have started early as being abused, or a lot of shame and guilt about their sexuality and how they discovered sex, and perhaps they were shamed or they felt horrible. And then as they begin to act that out and make that choice that they're no longer going to live like that, obviously they transform and experience that relationship of self-love and wanting to give back, oftentimes through the 12-step program. So it's all very much like this book you're going to be writing. So I can't wait to see that in print.
Okay, well, good. Well, hopefully in 2015 we'll get it out in print. And definitely, because, yes, you're absolutely right. Anybody that's getting sober, it's not just stopping the behavior, but it's actually growing into your authentic self and getting to live the life you were born to live. Remember Susan Boyle? She was the...
Oh, yes, kind of, I know. American Idol in Britain.
Yes, Britain's Got Talent. She was kind of frumpy. And then she opened her mouth, you know, and she sang, you know, I dreamed a dream from Les Mis. And it was so unbelievable. And for Christmas that year, one of my friends gave me a CD of hers. And there's a song on it that the first time I heard it, I cried. It's called I Am Who I Was Born to Be. And I cried for her because she was finally who she was born to be. And I cried for me because I feel very blessed that I've gotten to do the work that I do, that I've been able to use, been given to me in a way that it feels very congruent with who I am. So,
well, we've got about one more minute, and I would like for you to talk to men and women who are raising young boys and young girls and give them a couple of hints on how they can raise healthy children, particularly boys. You've got 1 minute.
Okay, well, first of all, stop telling them don't cry. Big boys don't cry. You're not allowed to cry. I know people have fear if my child is crying that they're not going to grow up to be a strong man. And really, it's age appropriate for them to be able to just experience whatever feelings they're having. So it's learning to stop saying you can't have that feeling, you shouldn't have that feeling, and just comforting the child when they're having a feeling that's painful. So definitely changing the verbal and definitely offering the comfort. When I think of a five-year-old little boy, five-year-old little girl, the little girl comes downstairs and says, Daddy, I'm afraid of the dark. He takes her upstairs. He comforts her. He gives her a teddy bear. He reassures her, I'm going to keep you safe. A little boy comes down and says, Daddy, I'm afraid of the dark. He might just get told, no, you're not. Get back up there. Stop it. You're a big boy.
Mm-hmm.
And
so be very sensitive to the feelings of young boys, toddlers and school-age boys, and really help them with their emotions in the same way you might do a little girl.
Absolutely. Right. Give permission for them to develop their emotional self.
Well, Patty Henry, thank you so much. She wrote The Emotionally Unavailable Man, A Blueprint for Healing. You've been very helpful, you know, when we were corresponding. I don't know who recommended you, but I got an email from somebody who listened to the show, and he said, I really enjoyed listening to her speak. I think she'd be a great interview, and you were, so thanks again.
Oh, you're welcome so much, and keep up your good work. I love it. If we all do our little part, the world will heal.
You got it. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Carol. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. So there we go. The Unavailable Man by Patty Henry. I encourage everybody to get that book. It reminds me of one of my favorite books, The Enlightened Millionaire, which is also a flip book. The Enlightened Millionaire, on one side, is a story about a woman with insurmountable challenges, and on the other side were the principles that she used to get through the crisis and grow really strong. Fabulous book. So I will, it's Monday, same time, place, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I know a lot of you just download the show and listen to it when you can. I love that, too. And next week we have Kent, who's going to be talking about the 5 primary feelings. I know you'll really enjoy that. So as I say at the end of every show, There'll only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the power to be yourself. We'll see you next week.